Stoveleg Media, igniting conversation.
This is True Crime Cast. My name is Jamie and my co-host's name is John, and I've never started out that way before.
I don't really know where you're going with that, but I like it. Yeah. And it's essentially the same.
Yeah, we are both co-hosts.
Six in one hand, half a dozen in the other.
Yeah, I did an interview for the Mississippi State newspaper. I don't know if you read it. It was about the desensitization of crime, becoming desensitized to crime through podcasts and stuff. And I was very clear, like, I'm one of the hosts.
I don't think I even knew about it. Right?
The newspaper thing? I don't know. I thought I sent it to you after it was done. Maybe I didn't. There's been a lot going on.
Yeah.
But no, I didn't get your approval, so I hope it's okay.
Yeah. I thought it was weird that a reporter asked me, why is this a now solo venture, True Crime Cast? And I was like, that's news to me.
But well,
no, I'm kidding, guys. We appreciate you tuning in each and every week, and we have no plans of going anywhere anytime soon. I think we have a really fascinating case today, and Jamie, it's about the boogeyman.
Yeah, a lot of lore goes into this one, and we've talked about other killers like Ed Gein and Leatherface portraying him, or even the killer in Silence of the Lambs coming from some real killers, but this is one that's almost a direct, like, this is a character I thought was fictional based on a real person.
Yeah, for sure. But before we get into that, I think you have a review that I want to hear.
Yeah, this comes from Thomas Varnell. It says, been enjoying listening to you guys for the last several years now. I believe the Rob Chalk case with Chris Jericho is my introduction, which is our second review in a row that's mentioned that. I've got a good case suggestion for y'all right out of my neck of the woods. Ronald Gene Simmons from near Dover, Arkansas. Love the content. Keep it up.
I am going to put that one on my list for sure. And thank you so much for listening in each and every week.
I'm guessing that's not Gene Simmons from Kiss.
Well, I mean, we haven't researched it yet. So what if it is? Who knows? I doubt it. I don't want a defamation case against me.
Yeah, let's not do that again. But no, we appreciate that review. Again, that's a great way to get us new story ideas. We have a running list of the recommendations we get, and most of the ones that we're getting to now have been recommended to us after doing this for 7 years. It's we've got a big list.
Yeah, absolutely. Don't forget, you can join us over on Patreon. We will have a brand new bonus episode only available to patrons over there on patreon.com, patreon.com. When you're there, search for True Crime Cast. We'll pop up. $3 a month gets you access to all of our backlog of episodes and all the bonus episodes. So, Jamie, why don't you get the ball rolling on this case?
Absolutely. We're going back to the 1970s to New York City. We're going to start out in Staten Island. And this is a famous story, probably popularized around campfires, right? Like, this is the scary story you tell when you're having a sleepover, when you just want to weird somebody out, right? This is the Cropsey story. And this is a boogeyman who has a hook for a hand and hit escape from a nearby mental institution. And he camped out in the ruins where he haunted, kidnapped, and murdered young children. Again, picture me by a fire with a flashlight on my face telling the story. But when a real-life girl was found dead in a shallow grave in an abandoned area of a school, police finally arrested a suspect of this very real killer, and his name was Andre Rand.
Yeah, this story was just told, like you said, around campfires, at camps of all kinds, and it really happened because, like, these stories, while they were wildly exaggerated and often not true at all, there was kind of a spree of children going missing in the Staten Island area, which is kind of what made this story infamous. But yeah, there was an arrest made, Andre Rand. So let's talk about him. He was born Frank Rostrum Roshan on March 11th, 1944 in Manhattan. And his family moved to Ithaca, where they raised he and his sister. According to Rand's sister, neither she nor her brother were sexually or physically abused growing up. Rand's father died when he was 14 years old, and his mother was then institutionalized at a place called Pilgrim Psychiatric Center in Brentwood, New York, where he and his sister would have to visit her. Between 1966 and 1968, he used the name Frank Burchett to work as a custodian and an orderly and as a physical therapy aide at Willowbrook State School, which was later renamed to the Staten Island Development Center. The Willowbrook State School was a state-funded mental institution for children with disabilities. We call it a residential center today. The school was shut down in 1987, and the campus was abandoned when they discovered that the staff was abusing and neglecting children.
Yeah, so you mentioned that there were no reports of assaults, but father died, mother institutionalized as a young teenager, certainly a traumatic childhood, going on to use a fake name to get a job. So things aren't starting out great here for Andre.
This school that was discovered and that they had been abusing children, I read one report that said that they were even like injecting children with needles that had a sexually transmitted disease on them, like hepatitis or syphilis, and were basically doing experiments on these children. So fascinating if that is true, and just crazy bizarre.
Horrible, yeah. And he left well before the school closed. In 1968, he officially changed his name to Andre Rand, and he worked odd jobs. He was sleeping in shelters and boarding houses and even camping out quite a bit around that Willowbrook campus. On May 5th of 1969, Rand was arrested in South Bronx for kidnapping and attempting to rape a 9-year-old girl. Rand had lured her into his car, and then he drove to a vacant parking lot. And when he was there, he removed his clothes and started removing the girl's clothes. But thankfully, a police car had been driving by, saw somebody struggling inside the car, went to check it out, and stopped the rape from happening. Rand was immediately arrested, as he should have been, and he pled guilty to sexual abuse and was sentenced to 4 years in prison, of which he only served 16 months and was granted parole in January of 1972. So kidnapping and trying to rape a 9-year-old girl, 1 year and 4 months.
Yeah, I mean,
unbelievable.
I mean, 4 years is even too little in my opinion, but
oh, yeah.
This is one of those situations again where you feel like you hear this early on in the story, and if he would have just been in jail, maybe some of these other awful things we're going to discuss wouldn't have happened. And shortly after his relief, several other girls and women began disappearing from the Staten Island area. On July 7th, 1972, a 5-year-old girl named Alice Pereira disappeared from the lobby of the Tyson Lane apartment building just a few miles from the Willowbrook School. So reportedly she was playing with her brother. This would be at 3:30 p.m. when he briefly left her alone. At 6:15 p.m., her mother woke up from a nap and realized she was missing. So she reported her daughter missing. And at that time, her parents were divorced. So the authorities thought that her father may have potentially abducted his own daughter and taken her back to his home, which was in Manhattan. He, however, was later cleared as a suspect. Alice has not been seen since that day. Today, Rand is the prime suspect because at the time, he was a painter in the Tyson's Lane apartment building.
And it falls in line with other things that we've seen him do, especially after kidnapping the 9-year-old. Kidnapping a 5-year-old is not out of the question, of course. In July of 1977, 18-year-old Audrey Lynn Nuremberg left her family's home in Brooklyn. She told her mom she was going to go run 2 blocks over to get a pack of cigarettes. But she never came home and was never heard from again. It wasn't totally out of the ordinary for her to go missing, though, and that's where it gets kind of tricky, especially with older teenagers who have the agency to go out and essentially survive on their own. They can usually get jobs. They can get tickets to places, bus tickets, plane tickets, whatever. So it's hard to tell whether they are intentionally missing or not, and Audrey did that sometimes. She also had schizophrenia that caused her to spend brief periods of time in several healthcare institutions. She stayed in institutions all over New York and Manhattan, Queens, and Brooklyn between the years of 1974 and 1977. When she disappeared this time, she was in outpatient care at Kingsborough Psychiatric Center in Brooklyn. The night before she went missing, Audrey went with her family over to Staten Island to a movie at the Jerry Lewis Theater. That movie theater was one street over from a campsite where Rand had previously stayed and was known to be around.
So all these things are happening, and they just kind of all happen around where Rand is at. 42-year-old Ethel Atwell was last seen on October 24th, 1978. Jamie, she was last seen at the Willowbrook State School.
Of course.
She worked there as a physical therapy assistant, and at 6 p.m. that day, there were two female employees who heard a man in the parking lot saying, come on, or something to that effect. And then they believed they heard Atwell say, no, you'll beat me, and then they heard her scream. The employees called the police after hearing the screams. However, the parking lot was dark, the street lights were off, and it was difficult for anyone to see what had happened. Ethel's purse, an earring, one black shoe, the three black buttons from her coat, and part of her dentures were found by first responders along the left side of her locked car. And then another 75 feet away in the woods, they found her car keys. However, there has been no trace of Ethel since then.
You know, we keep seeing these, and the age range is just wild, right? From 9 years old to 5 years old, and then Ethel being 42 seems a lot more like crimes of opportunity than having a specific type of victim, but I think we may see that hone in a little bit here. Shin Lee was a 44-year-old nurse who had gone missing in 1978 from Willowbrook State School under very similar circumstances to Ethel.
You have to question working there as a female, right? I mean, this is getting absurd at this point.
Absolutely. And obviously, I mean, we mentioned all the things they were closed down for. As if it wasn't dangerous enough that people are going missing, even going to work there was such a, I don't know, an ethically sketchy situation. She went missing on July 20th and was last seen walking home from campus to her house around midnight. Shin was found in a shallow grave near a wooded area on the grounds of the Willowbrook State School on August 6th, and this is just 2 months before Ethel went missing. Shin had been strangled to death, and Rand is the main suspect in both of these disappearances, but there's no concrete evidence linking him to either murder. John Occam's razor, right? The most logical answer is usually the answer. All these people around him and in places he stays are going missing or murdered. Seems pretty easy to point the finger at Andre Rand.
Yeah, I completely agree, but you're going to need more than that to hold up in court, which hopefully eventually we'll get to, right? In 1981, Rand tried to get a girl who was 9 years old to get into his green Volkswagen by offering her a lollipop. However, the girl managed to escape, but Rand followed her home. Now, there were no charges pressed against him at this time, but that same year, Holly Ann Hughes was on her way to the Port Richmond Deli, two blocks from her Staten Island home, and she was last seen buying a bar of Dove soap around 9:30 p.m. Holly never came home and has not been heard of since. A month after she went missing, Holly's mother received a phone call from a man who called himself Sal. Sal told Holly's mother, who was also named Holly, that he had his daughter held captive. He said that he would release the girl if Holly's mom met up with him to exchange sexual acts in front of a camera. Holly's mom went to the detectives, who arranged for a monitored meetup with Sal at Penn Station in New York City, but Sal never showed up.
What a horrific phone call to get. Not only is your daughter missing, but the ransom request being something like this just makes it all that much worse, in my opinion. And it makes you even more scared of how dangerous and unpredictable this person is. If they're just doing it for money, I mean, still a horrible, terrible situation, but somehow it seems different and maybe more hopeful. This had to be a very hopeless situation for Holly's mom, Holly. We're going to take a break. We'll get back and talk about how police followed up on this investigation and continued to look for whoever was killing or eliminating all of these people. Ultimately, police and Holly's mom would agree and decide that it's unlikely that this Sal individual had ever had Holly and that she was likely dead by this point. There were several witnesses that claimed to have seen Andre Rand's Volkswagen circling the area around the time that Holly went missing. They also say they saw Holly inside of Rand's car. Rand said he did play hide and seek with Holly that day and gave her money to buy soap because she was filthy, but claims that he left her before she disappeared. John, what adult male is out there playing hide and seek with a random 9-year-old girl? Was it different then? Is it a difference in change in the times? I know if I did that now, automatically I'm looked at as a horrible person with horrible motives, but was that okay then?
I'm going to say no. I don't think it was okay.
I can't imagine it ever was.
Yeah, I know times have changed, but I don't know that they've changed from that being okay to creepy now. I think that it's still creepy back then.
So when Holly's mom talked to police, she was able to hear Andre Rand's voice and said, "Hey, that's it. That's the voice of the man that called me and called himself Sal." But as with these other cases, there wasn't enough physical concrete evidence to arrest Rand for Holly's disappearance, so he was never arrested. In January of 2002, authorities looked through Rand's former home on Staten Island on Vreeland, but they weren't able to find anything pertaining to Holly's disappearance. So yet another person missing, no trail left behind, but people think they know that Rand was involved.
In 1983, he picked up 11 children from a local YMCA and took them to White Castle to get burgers before eventually taking them to the Newark airport to watch planes. 5 hours later, he took all of the children back to the YMCA, where he was met with police, and he was arrested, ultimately given 10 months in jail for unlawful imprisonment. I mean, basically, he kidnapped these kids. He did not have permission to take these kids anywhere. He did not work for the YMCA. He got 11 kids to get in his car and take them out, and God knows what would have happened, but this was crazy and not okay, and he got arrested.
10 months in jail. Again, 10 months. Kidnapped 11 kids.
Not even 1 month for every child.
Unreal.
12 days after he got out of prison for this, there was a 10-year-old girl who disappeared while running errands in her Staten Island neighborhood. She was last seen leaving the Mariner's Harbo Motel at 1:30 p.m. Her mother was sleeping, and another resident of the motel sent her out to pick up chicken wings from the Crown supermarket. This child has never been seen or heard from again. Her last name was Jackson. Her mother woke up to find out that her daughter had been missing for 3 hours, immediately called the police, but there was really nothing that was found. Her mother and her uncle were both questioned. They passed lie detector tests and they were ruled out as suspects. Rand had a campsite at the cemetery, which was less than a half a mile away from that motel. Her mother said that she had seen a man matching Rand's description loitering in the motel's parking lot. Rand was questioned about this disappearance, but no charges were filed.
Again, he just happens to be super close to all these crimes. It can't be a coincidence. On June 8th of 1984, we get to 22-year-old Hank Gaforio, who went out drinking. The Staten Island native went to the spa lounge in Port Richmond and stayed there until it closed at 4 a.m., and nobody has seen him since. This is our first potential male victim here. Before he went missing, he was spotted at the diner with Andre Rand. Hank was described as being quote-unquote slow. He likely was low IQ, maybe in the 70s. He lived with his parents and his three brothers, and he lived on the same block as Rand, just around the corner from the home of Holly Hughes that we talked about earlier. And Hank is another individual associated with Andre Rand that has never been found.
So then on July 7th, 1987, that leads us to a 12-year-old girl named Jennifer Schwager, and she was reported missing. Jennifer was a 12-year-old girl with Down syndrome. She was out for a walk near her home and then never came back. 35 days after she went missing, her body was found in a shallow grave on the former estate of Willowbrook State School. So police searched the area, and they actually found one of Rand's makeshift campsites near the grave. They also had multiple witnesses who reported that they saw Rand walking hand in hand with Jennifer toward Willowbrook on the day that she disappeared. He insisted that he never met the girl, but he was charged with the murder of Jennifer Schwager. He went to trial. Jamie, the jury failed to convict Rand on the murder charge, but in 1988, they did convict him of first-degree kidnapping, and he was ultimately sentenced to 25 years to life in prison.
So this is his third kidnapping charge. Remember, he kidnapped the 9-year-old girl in the beginning. He kidnapped those 11 kids. He had 4 years, of which he served one, and then 10 months. And now he's getting 25 years for this. So they found this girl's body, and they say he kidnapped her. How does the logic not follow that he's the one that took her life?
Well, when the medical examiner arrived to look at her body, Jennifer's body, they ruled the cause of death as basically asphyxiation, but her body was so badly decomposed, they couldn't really tell, like, by what means. Was she choked? Was there, you know, something wrapped around her neck? They just didn't know. So I think there was a lot of circumstantial evidence to suggest he did it, but they didn't have 100% proof. They didn't have a working theory on how exactly she was murdered. So they didn't have any murder weapons or anything. So do you want to take your chance and go to court with, you know, little to no physical evidence? I don't know.
I think that's the balance here, especially with a criminal like this of, no, we can't get a conviction for everything we want to convict him on, but we need him off of the streets. And thankfully, at least this does put him behind bars for a significant amount of time. And we really don't see a lot of movement in these cases until 2004. And that's when he was finally charged with the kidnapping of Holly Ann Hughes. Again, kidnapping. He was convicted of this and sentenced to another sentence of 25 years to life in prison. The second sentence makes it extremely unlikely that Rand will ever be free again. To this day, he's still behind bars. He's eligible for parole in the year 2037. At that time, he will be 93 years old, if he lives that long. Even while in prison, Rand continues to say that he's innocent of everything that he has been convicted of. In 2009, there was a documentary called Cropsey, and it premiered at the Tribeca Film Festival, where it won an award for Best Documentary. Many people in Staten Island today lived through these years and talk about Cropsey being around and people going missing, and that's where all of these campfire stories come from. Donna Cadugno is the president of Friends of Jennifer for Missing Children, which is a volunteer group that continues to search the area around Willowbrook twice a year to look for other remains of missing people, particularly the people we've talked about during this case, because they believe, and this is a quote from Donna, that he is the Hannibal Lecter of Staten Island. He terrified a whole community. He still haunts them. And a lot of these cases of missing individuals are remaining unsolved, and they want justice for those families. They want answers. And most people around there have no doubt that he was involved in some, if not most, of these disappearances. And again, he lived in the woods. He lived down the street. People saw him, but for the most part, even with his two convictions, he's convicted of kidnapping. They're unable to track murders back to him. I personally don't think it's because he's that smart of a criminal, John, but he continued to get away with this, and unless something changes really quickly, is going to have gotten away with it for good.
Yeah, I would hope that with this, the current sentence that he is given, that means that he will not be able to get parole and hopefully never see the light of day again. But if he did, in fact, murder several of these people, I would like to see justice served. And perhaps too much time has passed. Perhaps evidence just isn't available and we'll never see that. But I don't know. I mean, we don't know what the evidence collected at the scenes look like and if there's anything that's still pending, any DNA test that could ultimately link him back. Given the time frame, I want to say I doubt it, but we never know. I mean, we don't have access to know exactly what evidence they may or may not have.
Well, that's the problem for most of these, I believe, is that they don't even have remains for most of these people. They don't have remains for 5-year-old Alice Pereira, who went missing and was never seen again. They don't have remains for 18-year-old Audrey Lynn Narenberg. They don't have remains for Ethel Atwell. So all these people who are being essentially attributed back to Cropsey, back to Andre Rand, they don't even have the body. So there is potential evidence there. We just haven't found it yet.
Oftentimes when we see cases like this where there's the lingering question of if he was the one responsible for the murders, I feel like a lot of times prosecutors will kind of lump several cases together just to kind of, I don't know, have some kind of finality, if that's the right word, just some kind of closure to those cases. But I don't see that here. I mean, every one of these people that we discussed, even if their bodies weren't found, their crimes happened near or around where Rand was known to have been. So I don't think it's a stretch at all to say that he could very well be responsible for every single one of these. The only outlier is the man.
Yeah, he's the only commonality. And I think, there are other cases so similar to this in similar areas. The Long Island serial killer, who we're continued to, not we, not John and Jamie, but they're continuing to tie him to new victims, to find bodies and say, you know what, this was probably him too. He hasn't even been to trial yet, but they're still adding more and more bodies to this. And it's been, like a similar time frame. So if they're finding bodies and they have evidence to tie it to this guy, then how are they not able to do the same to Andre Rand? I really hope that at some point they can.
Yeah. I mean, Rand, every time I research someone who potentially is a serial killer, and then I research their past a little bit, I think, oh, they have such a similar background to every other serial killer yeah. we've talked about. However, he doesn't have any known abuse or sexual abuse, but he did all the stereotypical serial killer things. He had a traumatic life event when his father passed away. He joined the military and then kind of lived a transient lifestyle and somewhat homeless. So really interesting, and perhaps he is every bit of the monster that people think he is.
Well, I mean, even on top of that, you've got the situation where he was caught early, could have prevented all kinds of deaths if we had the hindsight, of course, to say, you know what, this guy is really dangerous, let's keep him off the streets. Instead, they sentenced him to 4 years for kidnapping, again, of which he just served a year and a quarter of those, or a year and a third, rather. And that allowed him to remain out and to continue killing, continue allegedly killing, because I guess he's never been convicted for murder, so we shouldn't say killing, I guess. Yeah. But it is alleged and very widely believed that he took the lives of most of, if not all of, the people that we've talked about today.
Perhaps one day as a society we'll realize that if a person is found guilty of kidnapping, perhaps we should sentence them to the max, because if they are capable of doing it for potentially the first time, they're definitely capable of doing it again.
Yeah, and of course, we don't talk about the cases where somebody gets convicted of kidnapping and they get out of prison and never do it again. I don't know. That may happen a lot. I can't imagine it does. But the only cases that make it across our desks are the ones where the initial sentence seems to have missed the boat and left people in danger. And that's where we find ourselves here. I do think this is, we usually ask, is this something that could be solved? And obviously there are several other crimes here that need to be solved. But I do think this, the Golden State Killer and the Long Island Serial Killer, those being solved has just given me so much hope for other cases in the country.
Absolutely. I do think this is something that we can have more, you know, convictions potentially. So I hope that is the case.
And if that's the case, we will absolutely update you on that. We do a lot of updates over on social media, particularly TikTok. We post everything on there. And then most of what makes it to TikTok ends up over on Instagram as well. So make sure you follow us over there. And we give a lot of case updates every month on Patreon.
Absolutely. And again, we will have a new Patreon for you at the end of this week. Can't believe April's already creeping up on us, but it's here. Actually, Jamie, I'm sorry. That will be next Tuesday.
So it will
be. You'll get a bonus episode and a regular episode on the same day. So you got a week.
I like to call that the jackpot. Double Absolutely. Episode day. Guys, we really appreciate you.
And until next crime, this has been True Crime Cast.
You've listened to True Crime Cast, distributed by Stoveleg Media. Check out Stoveleg.com to find out more about your hosts and to find other podcasts to listen to. Stoveleg Media, igniting conversation.